our thematic verses here. Stand fast in liberty wherewith Christ has made us free, and be not entangled again with the yoke of bondage. There are so many people out there that are on the Jesus Plus plan, but we don't want anything to do with it. It's Jesus alone. But when I was reading through this passage over the past couple of weeks and thinking about kind of this thematic verse and the way we're going to go this year, because we're going to continue on in our defining moments, I noticed a moment that's connected with our theme verse for this year, and it's found in verse 13 and 14, specifically 14. But it says, "For brethren, you have been called unto liberty." If you're a saved child of God, regardless of your background, regardless of your experience, regardless of how sinful your past has been and may currently be right now, if you're a saved child of God, salvation by grace isn't a license to just go live any old way you want to. You shouldn't do that. That's what the Apostle Paul is saying. Don't use your liberty. You've been called into liberty. Only use not your liberty as an occasion to flesh, but by love serve one another. For all the love is fulfilled in one word, even this: thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. And when we're talking about defining moments, as we continue on in the series of the defining moment, there is a moment that each of us faces every single day. You face it when you go out your front door. You face it when you come home at work and you're looking around. And that's what I call the moment of the neighbor. Because we're going to start off the year 2014 with a test. All right. If you do in your mind, if you'll do this for me, just kind of draw a little rectangle, and this rectangle is going to be your house, right? Test. I want you to name for me your neighbor on the left, on the right, and I happen to live on a cul-de-sac, so I got more. Just take a second, see if you can name all of your neighbors. Now, if you happen to live on the end of the street, just work with me on this one. Just a few people around you, just work with me on this one. Okay, this is the test that I took. And let me tell you the test that your pastor made, the grade that your pastor made. F. Because I'm going to tell you about my neighbors. This is juvenile delinquent. This is John and Maria, easy to remember. These are the Moabites. I don't like this one. This is parking offender, who likes to park in front of my house. This is baby Oliver and his parents, who are Georgia football fans. And this is the family that roots for Notre Dame. That, I swear, that's the extent to which I know them. And I got to be honest with you, when I looked at this passage today, I came up with a big fat failure on my part. I fall so far short of what God's standard is. But we're going to look at the moment of the neighbor today. Because as we seek to follow Jesus Christ, you're going to notice something in the words of Jesus. This theme of neighbor and neighborly love is very important to Jesus Christ. And if it's important to him, it should be important to us. As a matter of fact, in the Gospels, no less than eight times, the command, love your neighbor, is repeated. And when Jesus says something once, it's important. But if he says it eight times, it's time that we sit up and we listen. And so hopefully, and I don't want to lay a burden on you, but by this time next year, I'm going to come before you, Lord willing, and we don't get people moving in, and I'm going to be able to tell you all their names and a little bit about them, because I'm convinced that that's something that Jesus wants us to do. And it's not just the people on my street. It's the people in my office. It's the cubicles outside. It's the people I run into. There's a guy by the name of David Runyon, and he actually wrote a book, and it's called The Art of Neighboring. And it happened to do with this group of pastors who got together, and they went to this mayor of a city, and they say, "Hey, mayor, you know, how can we help the city to flourish? What is the single best, biggest factor that changes a city because we want to be a part of it with our Christian influence?" And the mayor said something actually interesting. He says, "Well, you know what? It's been studied time and time again, and the factor that helps cities to flourish the most are good neighborhoods. When we have good neighborhoods, the elderly are taken care of, at risk, young people stop being so at risk, crime actually goes way down, volunteering actually goes way up, and odd things like people take better care of their houses, they take better care of their yards, property values are better, and isolated people are less lonely. And most of the problems that we have, the mayor said, could be greatly reduced if our city just had a sufficient number of really good neighborhoods. Now, this is a mayor talking to a group of pastors, and the thought occurs to you, doesn't the Bible say something about this? Doesn't Jesus Christ himself actually say something about this? The Bible actually says, love your neighbor, and it actually has something to do with the neighborhood that we live in. And is it possible that Jesus actually thought this through, that Jesus gave us the most strategic proposal to impact the family of God and impact our world ultimately? Love your neighbor. Kind of significant to Jesus Christ. One day in Matthew chapter 22, a religious leader comes up to him. Matthew chapter 22, verse 26, he says, Master, which is the greatest commandment in the law? And of course, in Israel, they actually revered the Torah. They loved the Torah. They knew the Torah. And this is what's next. Jesus said unto him, Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, with all thy mind. Now, that would be, at that point, a really good answer for a rabbi. Because when you go to the Old Testament book of Deuteronomy in the sixth chapter and in the sixth and seventh verses, there was a saying, and it was called the Shema. It was a foundational saying. Every Israeli kid learned it. Every Jewish kid knew it by heart. They knew it like we know the words to happy birthday. And in the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 6, verse 4, I'm sorry, fourth and fifth verse, Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one God. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one God, and thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, with all thy might. This was the first prayer that an Israeli Jewish kid would have to memorize, called the Shema. And there is one God, and listen to the first word in the text. Hear, O Israel, listen up. The Lord our God is one God, and thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, with all thy might. So the answer that Jesus gives is a really good answer. It's politically correct. It's dead on theologically. And then Jesus does something very unexpected here in Matthew. Something actually quite staggering, and we kind of skip over it, but if you go into the moment, it's really quite staggering. Jesus actually adds an amendment to the Shema. And he says, and the second is likened to it. Love thy neighbor as thyself. Well, hold on a second, Jesus. What do you mean the second? This guy didn't ask for two. He asked for the most important commandment. But Jesus says, what's the great commandment? Jesus says, well, the second's likened to it. The second's just as important. And then he says, on these commandments hang all the law and the prophets. Now, we might miss just how staggering this is to the hearers that were standing around Jesus. It would be kind of like, okay, everybody, say with me the Pledge of Allegiance. The Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which stands one nation under God, indivisible, liberty and justice for all, especially to Georgia. You don't have the right to amend the pledge. I mean, the pledge is the pledge. Nobody has the right to amend the pledge. It stands on its own, but somebody amends the pledge. This is even more far-encompassing than that. Nobody gets to add words, but Jesus himself considers himself able to amend the Shema. Now, why does he do that? What's Jesus up to? And there's something actually terribly important going on here. There is this theme in Judaism that is always present, and it's also always in danger of being lost. It's the notion that love for God and love for people are inextricably linked together. In fact, you cannot love God like you're supposed to if you don't love people. Now, in a world where everybody is weird, in a world of total depravity, that's hard to do. We are such a self-justifying, delusional people. And I can justify myself and not liking somebody before I can blink my eye, before I can take a breath. Before I can think a thought, I can come up with justifications of why I shouldn't extend love and reach out in love to other people. Now, I want to be balancing. Because I'm not some dope-smoking, flower-carrying hippie, just, let's just all get along. We live in a world of total depravity. There are people that we are to avoid. There are situations that we're not supposed to find ourselves in. There are places that we shouldn't go. The Bible's really clear about that. So this is not talking about places to go, people. This is talking about the attitude of the heart. And if you've got the right heart, you will show the love that we're supposed to show. You'll avoid the places you're supposed to avoid because stand fast in the liberty wherewith Christ has made you free. This is not going to be a sermon about do's and don'ts, although we're going to get kind of concrete on how we can actually follow Jesus in this realm, because these are lessons I got to learn. But this is not a list of do's and don'ts. This is not a guilt trip to make y'all feel guilty. Stand fast in the liberty wherewith Christ has made you free. So don't go feeling guilty right now. Let's just take this as an opportunity to love. Stand fast in the liberty. This whole year, I hope we get to touch on the theme of the liberty and the satisfaction in Jesus Christ, because he was the ultimate satisfaction to God. And if you happen to miss a Sunday this year, that's okay. You have that liberty. If you're tithing less than 25% of your income, that's okay. Oh, come on, people. That was funny. Stand fast in the liberty. And if at the end of the year you only know two of your four neighbors, that's okay. This isn't about guilt. This is about an attitude of the heart, because when we can change the heart, we can change our families. We can change our cities. We can change our communities. We can change our church. We can change this world. It's exciting. And it's important to Jesus. Breathtakingly important. So to the degree that you say, and I think most everybody here would say, I love God, I love Jesus, the next question is, are you loving your fellow man? And that's where I fall short. And I know y'all fall short. We're all sinners. We all need God. There's none righteous, no, not one. There's none to do with good. That's our condition outside of the saving grace of Jesus Christ. So it's important to understand what the Bible means when it says, love your neighbor. Like I said, Jesus quoted this not once, not twice, but eight times in the gospel. Jesus said it so often, it became known as the Great Command. 2,000 years later, it's the Great Command. You cannot succeed at life if you fail at love. You cannot succeed in life if you fail in love. So it's important to understand what the Bible means when it says, love your neighbor, because we get a lot of goofy ideas from Hollywood. We get a lot of goofy ideas from society and from some of the self-help books out there. Love your neighbor. A lot of confusion because about what exactly love is, because love is not a sentimental thing. And there's nothing really soft about love. And the best definition I know of is very, very simple, very, very concrete. To love your neighbor is actually to intend their good. Let's talk for just a second about what love is not. Love is not desire. I love moon pies. You know, you get a good moon pie and an RC Cola or something like that. That's just proof of the existence of God. I mean, that's just good stuff right there. I love moon pies. It's just a little cellophane, little cellophane wrapped portion of pure goodness. I love Krispy Kreme donuts. But my intent is to consume them for my personal satisfaction. I don't intend their good. I intend their destruction. Now, hey, let's talk about love, young ladies, young men. Love is not the same thing as desire. Like I desire moon pies, you might desire that young lady, you might desire that young man. That does not mean it's the same thing as love as biblically understood. Are you doing it to satisfy your own needful desires? Because that's not love. Love is intending their good. Now, you know, I had a personal experience here. We got Daniel visiting us today and last night. It was nice having him this weekend. I just want to let y'all know that he's gotten an A+ so far, you know. But I have watched him. He has opened the door for my daughter. He has treated her with all times, has treated her with respect. And I watched him, and it's clear to me at this time that he intends her good. That's love. I appreciate that. Thank you, Daniel. For all those that are going into dating arena, I just want to say, as you're dating young ladies, young men, intend the good of the opposite sex. We got some visitors here. Hey, look, if you're intending the good of the opposite sex for young women, there are going to be times you're going to have curfews when you need to be out of the, you know, you got to get home. I just let's get that out there. There are things you don't need to be doing in situations you don't need to put yourself in. That's to intend the good. Love is not the same thing as desire. What is that stupid song from 1976? It can't be wrong when it feels so right. Oh, you light up my life. What? Trash. Love is not the same thing as desire. And I want you to be careful. When you're listening to your songs about love, I want you to be careful about the lyrics that you're singing, because it can put an awful lot of bad ideas in your head. Okay. But hey, let's stand fast in liberty wherewith Christ has made us free. I'm not here to censor your songs. I'm not here to censor your dates. I'm just giving you some godly principles and guidelines here. You know I've been complaining about my neighbor who parks in front of my house over the course of the past 6 months. I've been complaining. But as I follow Jesus, I have to realize, you know, I need to pray for help with love. I got to pray for help to bear and to forgive and just to be gracious. Because here's the thing, I can't do that on my own power. We talked about the fact that we live in a world of total depravity, that we live in a world of everybody is weird. We all got issues. So how do you do it? I mean, how do you truly love your neighbor? How do you truly love these people that just in a world like that? Because loving God as your greatest treasure and loving your neighbor as a self, this isn't optional. You know, Jesus said in Matthew chapter 7, verse 27, he's talking about you got a guy who builds his house in the rock. You got a guy who builds his house in the sand. One's smart, one's foolish. Then he goes along and he says, you know what? You got people who hear my words and do them. Those are really smart people. Then you got people who hear my words and don't do them. Those are really foolish people. So we want to be the smart people that hear and do. Hear and do. Hear, O Israel, the Lord your God is one God. Love him with all your heart, mind, soul, strength, body. Oh, by the way, Jesus said with the amendment, that includes loving your neighbor as yourself. Because it's real easy to say, oh, I love God, but ignore your neighbor. I want you to notice a couple of things that Jesus said too. Love your neighbor as yourself. And we're going to get kind of concrete on this one. But I need help. It's kind of like we're flying to Texas, right? And you know, at the beginning of the flight, in the airline, the stewardess gets up and she's doing this number right here. Any of y'all ever actually listen to what she says? Right? One of the things, one of the things you're going to find out is if the plane has an emergency, oxygen will fall out of this tube. Right. And I remember I was sitting there next to Caleb and he was listening in rapt attention. And the lady gets to the fact that oxygen will fall out. Parents, if you have a young child with you, give yourself the oxygen first before you give it to the kid. And Caleb looks up at me. Would you do that, Daddy? Well, yeah, because you can't give what you don't have. If you pass out or something like that, you can't tend to the rescuing of the other people. I'm hopeful I can hold my breath long enough, but you can't give what you don't have. Well, God says here, and Jesus says here, I want you to love God. I want you to love your neighbor as yourself. You can't give love if you don't have love, right? This is the way the Apostle Paul puts it. We'll go back to our thematic verse. Paul puts it like this. Stand fast, therefore, in the liberty wherewith Christ has made us free. And be not entangled again with the yoke of bondage. Behold, I, Paul, say unto you, if you be circumcised, Christ will profit you nothing. And I testify again, every man that is circumcised, he's a debtor to do the whole law. Christ has become of no effect to you. Whosoever are justified by the law, you are fallen from grace. For we through the Spirit wait for the hope of righteousness. I just want to pause right there because I know we got some young people, maybe some preteens that are like, huh, what? What's this whole circumcision thing about? Ask your parents. But this is what's going on here. The Jews are going on the Jesus Plus plan. They love the whole idea of Jesus, but they're saying to the people, hey, you got to do Jesus and you got to be circumcised. The Apostle Paul is standing up in as vehement as language he can and say, we're not on the Jesus Plus plan. It's not Jesus plus circumcision. It's not Jesus plus anything. Whenever you get on the Jesus Plus plan, you're going to have some problems because our totally depraved nature is going to cause people to judge each other based on how many pluses you got. Are you, oh, you're not on the Jesus Plus plan? I guess I'm just a better Christian than you. You got to watch out for the judgmental spirit. It is so ingrained in each one of us. And notice that the Apostle Paul keeps on going with that. Verse 13, for brethren, you have been called into liberty. This whole idea of being free in Christ, he is perfectly satisfied. God, it's just overwhelming to Paul. He says, you've been called into liberty. Only use not your liberty as an occasion to flesh, but serve one another. For all the law is fulfilled in one word, even this, thou shalt love thy neighbor. It's an attitude of the heart. Then the Apostle Paul, he goes on to add to it just a few more verses. He says, then I say again, walk in the Spirit, ye shall not fulfill the lust of the flesh. For the flesh lusteth against the Spirit against the flesh, and these are contrary the one to another, so you cannot do the things that you would. He's saying, hey, there's something that's going to weigh you down. There's something that's going to hold you back. There's something that's just going to stop and prevent your Christian walk, and this is when you start fulfilling the lust of the flesh. I tell you, personal experience here, just kind of anecdotal evidence. I can obsess on things, just, you know, true statement here. I can obsess on things. I can repeat arguments in my head, and I can stay angry. I can. I can take the slightest offense and I can just build it up and keep replay it in my mind till my blood pressure goes up and the veins in my forehead start popping out. I can do it. And this is what the Apostle Paul is talking about to a certain degree. Fulfilling the lusts of the flesh. The flesh likes to stay angry. Your nature, it likes to stay angry. It likes to stay lustful. It likes to gossip. It likes to sin. It likes to backbite. The Apostle Paul says, you know, you got some choices, children of God. You got some choices. You can feed that. You can feed your self-righteous superiority where you think you're a better Christian because you don't celebrate Halloween. You don't have Christmas trees. You bake bread at home and you homeschool. You can think you're a better Christian, but you're not. You are not. You're nothing but a totally depraved, wicked sinner. The only thing that makes you better than, you know, the only thing that makes you better is Jesus Christ and Christ alone. It's all about Jesus. It's not about anything you did, anything you said, any way you act, any way, anything you avoid, any books you don't read, any holidays you don't celebrate. It's not about that stuff. Because, you know, I mean, fundamentally, there are a lot of Christians out there that believe, well, you know, I'm having trouble with this holy thing, so if I can't be really holy, I can at least be weird. Look, some of you smoke. Some of you don't. Some of you dance. Some of you don't. Some of you listen to rock music. Some of you don't. It's not about all that stuff. It's all about Jesus Christ. Now, as you really just fall in love with Christ, it's going to work on your heart. And here I am pushing 50, still 49, pushing 50, and I'm still working on it. And one of the things, and it just hit me like a 2x4 when I'm reading this verse, I got to connect it with how I'm loving my neighbor. And when I'm really honest with it, I'm just not doing that good of a job. But if I want to follow Jesus, who said this 8 times in the gospel, if I want to follow Jesus, who connects it with loving God, man, I got to change the way I think because I want to please the Savior that I love so well. So let's get real concrete again. Love is not the same thing as desire. Love, you know, our culture gets quite confused about this. Love is not the same thing as doing what somebody else wants me to do. Any parent who's ever had a child understands this real clearly. To love somebody, quite simple, and it's very concrete. Love is quite simple. It's real concrete to intend somebody else's good. It's not mysterious. It's to intend somebody's good as God defines goodness. That's why it's okay for parents to say no to their children. That's why it's okay. And I want them, you know, we want them to become their best selves possible as they were made to be. If I really love them, I'm willing to expend energy and to wrestle with them in that direction. I think about the struggles we've had with our own children. You know, I'm not going to get detailed. But, you know, we struggled with our children on certain issues. We're still struggling with our children on certain issues. Heck, Brie and I are still struggling with each other on certain issues because we intend each other's good. I want her to worry less, and she wants me to actually be a Christian. I mean, we're struggling. I just want to say this. I know I joke a lot about Maria and myself, but she really is a better person than I am. But she also really is a depraved sinner. She is. And she'll be the first to admit that to you. She is a better person than I am. And I am blessed to have her. I've been watching her over the holiday season just beat to the bone. And she's like, okay, we've got to do this. We've got to visit this person. We need to do this. And it's all born of love. And I'm like, woman, I only get, you know, this is my vacation. No, this is an opportunity to serve and to love. And I just want to say, I'm actually kind of blown away. Now, I'm going to get fussed at for saying that to y'all. So, you know, these are the sacrifices I make as a pastor. Anyway. Get back to the sermon. You know, love is not the same thing as just being a pushover and letting everybody, you know, do another person. Jesus says, thou shalt love thy neighbor. Thou shalt love thy neighbor, not a cause. Not some abstract group of marginalized people who are conveniently located on the other side of the globe, someplace real far away where I never actually have to be put out by coming into contact with them. Love your neighbor, not a cause. I am so blown away, and you know, by pro-abortion people who are all about saving the wells. I don't get it. Pro-abortion people who are so into being green and saving the environment, there's just, in my brain, there's a logical disconnect. But here's the thing. I can get real judgmental about that. But Jesus says, love your neighbor. Jesus didn't come up to me and Jesus didn't come on up to me and say, you know, repress your neighbor. I'll get back to that in just a second. Here's the thing about the Lord that we serve. Matthew 11:29 says, take my yoke upon you. This is Jesus talking. Take my yoke upon you. Learn of me, and ye shall find rest in your souls. Dig it. Take. Learn rest. Are any of y'all got right now just kind of troubled souls? I woke up this week and it was just the middle of the night. It was like 3:00 and I was having like a midlife crisis or something. It wasn't really a midlife crisis. It was actually a midweek crisis. But any of y'all ever do that? Because I was just like, oh my word. Because tomorrow morning I start a multi-defendant trial and it's a pretty big trial. And it's had some publicity and I'm like, ah, oh, this guy. And I just got seized up in it. Just like, whoa. Take heed, rest. And like just anecdotally how this worked for me. I wake up, I say, hey Marie, I've got some things I gotta work on. I put a little bit of work into the office, but on my way back home, I was just thinking of all the other things I did, and I was starting to get this little anxiety of me, and I'm like, you know, I preached to Marie about not worrying, why can't I just do it to myself for a second? Take heed, rest. Well, all right, Lord, let's try this. You know, let me take your yoke. Let me heed your words. Hey, John. McFly, you know, wake up here. Stand fast in the liberty where we've been called. You know, my reputation as being a good trial attorney. That's all it is. It's just, you're a good trial attorney. Yippee. In the big scheme of eternity, that means squat, less than squat. It's not even dust in the particle of the universe. The thing that's really important in life is that in God's eyes, I'm perfect through Jesus. In God's eyes, he's well pleased with this knucklehead through Jesus. Not because I'm a good trial attorney. Not because I win or lose this case. And I was sitting there thinking about the fact that even if I lost and I got excoriated, it's okay. God loves me. Man, that kind of set me free. I took, I heeded, and my soul found rest. When I'm thinking about loving my neighbor, I got to be honest with you, I'm filled with some anxiety. The Moabites at the end of the street, I don't know what they're involved with. I just know there's a lot of cars that come in and out all kinds of nights, and I know that there's all kinds, and they dress funky. I know that. They got a lot of tattoos on that, and it's like, ugh, there's some anxiety going on there. Baby Oliver's parents are cool because they're Georgia fans, but then there's Elton and Ethan and that situation going on. I can't figure it out with their parking issues. I mean, I'm filled with all their anxiety, but here's the thing. Maybe I try and fail. That's okay because I'm okay with God. Maybe I reach out, take a chicken pot pie that Maria baked, and that's okay because if I fail and they throw it in my face, at least I tried. But I'm just going to be like that sower that throws seed out there. Somebody's going to fall in the hard rock. Somebody's going to fall in the soft soil. I'm going to leave it up to God to be the person that tends the soil. That's his job. My job is just to go out there and throw some seed and let God work at it. Because I want to show you something that's really cool about the Bible. When you look in Matthew, about the fourth verse into Matthew, chapter 1, about the fourth verse, you're going to find out something about the lineage of Jesus Christ. Then you had Obed, who was married to Ruth. In Jesus' lineage, he had Moabites in his lineage. Now, these are people far, far from God. They were descendants of the incestuous relationship of Lot and his daughter. They're disgusting people. Well, in the lineage of Christ, he had Moabites. In the lineage of Christ, he had Tamar, who was a victim, she was a victim of an unspeakable assault. Boom. Then in the lineage of Jesus, you had people of nefarious backgrounds. You had Solomon and David who married Uriah's wife, just reminding you of the fact that David's an adulterer. Problems all around. Jesus can take all kinds of issues. Moabites, parking issues, juvenile delinquent issues, Georgia Tech fans, and he can change it all for good. That's the power of the God that we serve. So when Jesus says, love God, love your neighbor, okay, all I got to do is let it come from my heart. And I got to do it the way God says, not the way Oprah says or Dr. Phil says or something like that says. You know, a few years ago, there was a nationwide poll, and it says, what phrase would you most like to hear in the new year? Three things in this order. Number one thing people most want to hear in this coming year, I love you. Number two thing that people want to hear, I forgive you. Third thing that people want to hear the most in the coming year, supper's ready. That's kind of cool. But you know, it occurred to me that in all three elements, I love you, I forgive you, dinner's ready, you actually find that at the communion table. You find that in the person of Jesus Christ. The first statement of good news that people long to hear in this year is, I love you. Stand fast in the liberty wherewith Christ hath made you free. It was Christ that made you free. It was Christ that purchased your salvation. It wasn't anything you did, any way you acted, any way you behaved, any mantra that you chanted. It's not your lack of celebrating Halloween. It's not your lack of celebrating Christmas. It's not the fact that you do celebrate Christmas and not the fact that you do go out on Halloween. It's none of that. It's not your enjoyment or lack of enjoyment of the Vampire Diaries or, you know, the fact that you watch Teletubbies. I mean, it's nothing. It's not the fact that you bread bake, grind your own wheat or any of those things. It's not the fact that you've stayed out of trouble. It's not the fact you have a clean criminal record or you don't. It's none of that. Stand fast in the liberty where Christ hath made you free. Man, why did he do this? Well, it goes to 1 John chapter 4. We love him because he first loved us. You can't flip that. You can't flip that and have good theology. He first loved us when we were unlovable. When we were yet in sin, Christ died for the ungodly. You can't claim any credit on the love of God. I love you. Let that resonate this year. God saying, I love you. Love, love. I love you. And then ultimately, Christ says, you know, I forgive you. Then at the dinner table, Christ says, dinner's ready. Why don't you come on? Take my yoke. My yoke is easy. My burden is light. And find rest for your soul. Dinner's ready. For Jesus, I just want to, we're going to close out here in just a little bit, but I just want a couple of little concrete things here. Because Jesus, love is at the core of the person who created the universe. For Jesus, love is not a value to be added. Love is at the core of this entity and this power that created the universe. Love is who God is. God is love. That's Bible. Love is not necessarily permissive. Love is not the same thing as desire. Love is not the same thing as just being malleable and doing what everybody wants you to do. And that's called being a stepping stone. And it's no coincidence that we find these instructions. Love your neighbor as yourself. Because they taught that there was a God who loves. In the ancient world, nobody says, Zeus is your God, therefore love your neighbor. Nobody said, Molech is your God, therefore love your neighbor. The Quran does not say, Allah is your God, therefore love your neighbor. Christianity is very unique. Christianity teaches, love God, love your neighbor. Your neighbor is cherished by God, and that's the only foundation for the dignity that his family has. Other people matter equally, not because they're equally smart or equally attractive or equally able or equally anything else, but because all of God's family is equally loved by God, cherished by God. And that's why when you see a person, no matter what their IQ, no matter what their color, first thought, I need to love. I need to love. We love because he first lived us. That's 1 John chapter 4, verse 19. Now let's get concrete, just a few things. Bible is filled with these wonderful instructions to make your love, your neighbor, concrete. And the Hebrew mind was really concrete in that way. In Proverbs chapter 3, verse 28, this is what Proverbs 3:28 says. It says, say not unto your neighbor, go and come again, and tomorrow I will give, when thou hast it with thee. In other words, if you have it, they need it. Lend it. Give it. The Bible says neighbors care about what belongs. Neighbors care about what belongs to one another. Just go ahead and give it. Just real concrete ways. Exodus chapter 22, verse 14. This is an interesting one. If a man borrow aught, and that's referring to an animal. If a man borrow an animal of his neighbor, and it be hurt or die, the owner therefore being not with it, he shall surely make it good. In other words, if you got your neighbor's animal and it dies, replace it. Make restitution. You know, and this kind of, and you know, you can extrapolate from that. Because we're talking about ways to get concrete with your neighbor. If your neighbor needs something, loan it to him. And if you loaned it to him, give it back to him. Now, you know, Rich and I are family. So we're on the 3-year loan program. The other, you know, I remember this year, maybe it was last year or something. He's over there and he points at a piece of equipment that was in my garage. He says, John, didn't I loan that to you? And I'm like, you know, I don't remember. When did you do that? And he says, about 3-4 years ago. It's like, oh, okay. You got to be a better neighbor than your pastor. Okay, now here in Exodus, it says, hey, if you got your neighbor's animal and it dies, replace it. Make restitution. Now, we're not really into borrowing other people's animals, although there's something unique in the 21st century, 21st century? Yeah. People actually make play dates with their neighbor's dogs. You ever notice that? You know, you go to the dog, hey, let's have a play. I notice that. I go to the dog park and people are bringing in multiple dogs. They've got their neighbor's dogs and their dogs have play time together. It's kind of cool. You don't see that with cats. I'm just saying. Cats are unbiblical animals. You don't find them in the Bible. I see zebras, I see dogs, I see chimpanzees. Anyway, but hey, man, if your neighbor's got a dog, you get asked about your dog. If neighbor's got some sort of animal, you ask about your animal. People have an interest in their animals. I mean, it's just a real concrete way of being a good neighbor. One last one here, and I love this. This is from the book of Proverbs, chapter 14, 21. He that despiseth his neighbor sinneth. He that despises his neighbor sinneth. But he that hath mercy on the poor, happy is he. Of course, you know, everybody has needs. And one of the ways we can despise people is simply by just withdrawing from them. Giving them the cold shoulder. So if we follow Jesus, we won't withdraw from people. We'll actually move forward and move towards them. And a wonderful way to do that is just by asking questions. Such a simple thing to do. When did you move in? Where did you grow up? What brought you here? What do you do for a living? You know, just simple questions. How'd you meet? If you're talking to a couple. It's always fun. And by the way, should your neighbors not be married together, they're just living together, you don't actually have to say to them, hey, you know you're living in sin. You don't have to say that. You can still just ask, how did you meet? Because Jesus didn't actually say, perform behavior modification on your neighbor. He said, love your neighbor. He didn't actually say, pronounce judgment on your neighbor. He said, love your neighbor. And he loved people that were hurting. He loved people that were in sin. Bake something, take it over to somebody's house, invite somebody over to watch a game. Just notice somebody who has needs. I can tell you this. I've talked to pastors from other area churches about this idea of married people, unmarried people living together and reaching out to them. We know that's wrong. We know that's wrong. But how the idea of loving people like Jesus loves them can transform it, and at least down in Brother Glenn's church, you know, actually experienced it where they were working with a young couple that wasn't married, and the lady became convinced, the couple became convinced, and they moved apart until the day of their wedding. Now, they were wrong to, you know, they were wrong to live together to begin with, but they made it right. And they're some of the better members that he has right now. So don't you love your neighbor. He didn't say perform behavior modification. He didn't say pass judgment. Now, again, there are things that are wrong, and we're not called to shrink back from that, but when we're expressing love, how can we best express love in a way that's biblically correct and biblically accurate in that regard? It's fascinating. You know, and hey, let me just give you one last one. Leviticus chapter 19, verse 32. It's fascinating here. It says, thou shalt rise up before the hoary head, and for kids that means gray-headed. Thou shalt rise up before the gray hair and honor the face of the old man. Fear thy God, I am the Lord. Isn't that just a great verse? Maybe there's an older person in your neighborhood. You could just notice them because we live in a world that doesn't notice very much. And again, it's all tied to God. Somehow, when we love people who are most likely to be overlooked, we're loving God. You feed the hungry, you're loving God. You clothe the poor, you're loving God. Thank you all so much for participating in Lily's Co-op. Thank you for everyone that goes to a nursing home to visit. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Because when you love people, you're loving God. And then it keeps on going. It says, and if stranger sojourn with thee in your land, you shall not vex him. But the stranger that dwelleth with you shall be unto you as one born among you. And thou shalt love him as thyself. For ye were strangers in the land of Egypt. I, the Lord, am your God. What a God. It is Jesus who takes this and sees clearly and presents it so unforgettably and opens it up beyond just that one nation of Israel to the whole world, and the world would never be the same again. And you can do that. Maybe there's an older person in your neighborhood that when it snows tomorrow, he can shovel his driveway. Maybe. Just stop, talk, invite him for a meal. Now, why do we do all this? And we're going to close right now. Why do we do all this? Well, there's a reason, and it's grounded in God. Jesus said a very long time ago words that are often read at funerals, but listen to them in a new light. In the light of the moment of the neighbor. In my Father's house are many mansions, and I go to prepare a place for you. In my Father's house are many mansions. If it were not so, I would have told you. I go to prepare a place for you. And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and receive you unto myself, that where I am, ye may be also. Whose neighborhood are we going to end up in? Well, that's Jesus' neighborhood. And when you move in, Jesus is not going to say, well, there goes the neighborhood. He'll say, hi, neighbor. And this saying, love God, love your neighbor. This saying is what the incarnation is all about. God is your neighbor. In my Father's house are many mansions. How many? We don't know. Here, there got a mansion. They probably got a mansion. They probably got a mansion. They all probably got a mansion. I don't know. I'm not supposed to be a mansion judger. All I'm supposed to be is a person who just loves God. So 2014, stand fast in the liberty wherewith Christ has made you free. Verse 14, and this is how we're going to do it. Love your neighbor. Those are the words of the Apostle Paul. If we're going to grow as a church and be followers that Jesus wants us to be, this is one of the ways that we can get really concrete about it. So I welcome you in 2015 to take this test with me to see how we're doing.